soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion, sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
Well, 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 there's a song out of your past. I'll bet you can't guess who's singing that song, one that was banned from the radio all over the world. Yeah. Well, later in the show, we'll tell you who sang that song about the working man. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance, and this is the 26th of August, 2003, so we can date this show real good for you. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 65, Fallbrook, California, 92088. And believe me, you can put on War, Fallbrook, Tom Metzger, Fallbrook, almost anything, and I get my mail, but it's better to say Box 65. And our big website, our growing website, and we're going to put some video back up on there again. I know you guys like that video. And it's at resist.com, along with all those radio shows and those past radio shows that you can download. Now, on some of the older shows, you're going to hear offers for products and things that are either not around anymore, or the price has changed, or something like that. Or we may talk about Shoutcast, which we haven't been on Shoutcast for some time, but we're planning to go back on. But when you hear an old tape from an old show, Well, you'll have to communicate with us if what everything we talk about is not quite according to what it is today, because, you know, some of you are going to be listening to this 20 years from now. Want to bet? You'll probably have to hide them in your basement and cover them up with kryptonite. But these shows will still be around, just like George and Lincoln Rockwell's shows. Now, also, we're going to start cranking out DVDs. Yeah, DVDs. And a lot of people now have DVD players and are not using their VCRs. So stand by for the announcement on which ones. I think we're going to do History of War 1, 2, and 3 first on DVD. And I think you'll really enjoy that. Now, our email address is warmetzger@sbcglobal.net. That's warmetzger@sbcglobal.net. And at least every other day, we put out a big, long news update. Tommy's Hateful News, yes. And so if you have a computer, even a web TV computer, you can get on there and get our up-to-the-date racial hatred news at least every other day. And we've got hundreds of people on our list, and they really love it. You're going to hear things you don't hear on regular TV and radio, and you might even hear the term nigger once in a while. Now, on today's show, we're going to be talking about a new book that's out that's, I think, done pretty well. It's fresh out. And then we're going to talk about James Mason's book, Siege. It's been republished. And we're going to be talking about The Killer of the Molesting Priest and about the power grids and about more troops in Iraq. And, hell, we got all kinds of stuff. There's a concert coming up on the 16th of September. And Matt Hale's trial's coming up in September, and all about the gas line breakdown in Arizona, and Rockwell Fest stuff, and and we are going to go back on Shoutcast. And also, another question for you we'll answer at the end of the show. What part, or what region, or what major city in the Northeast, North America, did not shut down its electricity? Its electricity kept right on going, and all the people around that area could look down the hill, over the top of the hill, and say, God, they got all electricity in the world. And we'll tell you why. Okay, so we're waiting now for the Doctor of Truth, Wyatt Kaldenberg. Yes, as Pilate said, what is truth? And we'll have some callers, so stand by. Here we go. Well, here he is, the illustrious, the highly intellectual, the doctor of mythology. He's the now self-proclaimed doctor of
absolute motherfucking truth.
Oh, man, come on.
My title gets longer every week.
Come on, you know, and I'm still just plain old terrible Tommy.
Yeah.
Come on. Hey, how you been doing?
Pretty gravy.
Hey.
You know, tomorrow morning, Mars will be the closest to Earth it will be in for another 60,000 years.
I hope it don't miss it. Then I'll have to hang around for another 60,000 years.
Darn right.
Man, I'll tell you.
I'll be out there.
I went out there in the backyard about a week ago, you told me. And I looked all over the hell. I couldn't find it. And I laid on my back, and I got my binocs out, and I looked. All I could see was Mercury, or that bright star, whatever.
That's Mars.
Mars? It was up in the southwest.
Yeah, it starts over here, and then it ends in the southwest.
Well, how the hell do I... What time?
Well, in the morning, it's in the southwest, and then in the afternoon, it's over here.
Where is it at night?
Up in the middle of the sky. It's the really bright one.
Well, I thought that was...
that's Mars.
What's that other one that's supposed to be so bright?
Well, Mars is the bright one is the moon, and the second bright one is Mars.
Yeah, but it wasn't red.
Well, it's only red when it's on the horizon.
Well, why didn't you tell me that?
Because it's the reflection of the sun.
Okay, we got that straight. Hey, I got great news.
What?
Well, Sean sent us an email and says, hey, he looked up... the location for this Druce fella that killed that child molesting priest up there in, let's see, where is it at? In fact, they don't give the...
Oh, you mean that black guy that killed that black priest because of molesting him when he was a kid?
No, this guy, remember the priest they just put in prison for molesting hundreds of kids over the years? Yeah. Well, he just got strangled to death. Where you been?
Well, there's so many priests that are molesting kids, Tom. When you talk about a priest molesting kids, why not talk about an apple tree that has apples on
well,
it?
Well, this was the great-great-granddaddy of them all, man. Uh-huh. Well, anyhow, Mr. Druce, he wrapped a towel around his neck or something like that and choked that son of a bitch to death. Now, Sean sent me this brief thing. Druce, he's in custody in Souza, S-O-U-Z-A, dash Baranowski, B-A-R-O, or A-N-O-W-S-K-I. I guess that's the prison he's in, and it's up in the northeast someplace. And they've got a number, I think, where you can find out more information, which is 877-421-8463. That's and we're telling people send him letters and greeting cards and everything else. Send him a box of candy, man.
Yeah.
Huh? He did a good thing. He did a good thing because, you know, most of those kids that were messed with were white kids. Yeah.
So he's kind of like the modern Pontius Pilate, isn't he?
Pontius Pilate? What's
yeah,
he got
Pontius
to do?
Pilate killed a faggot, and so did this kid.
Oh, man. You're going to lose us all our Christian vote out there. Come on. We still had a few Christians hanging
yeah.
on, but you're going to drive them all
oh,
off.
Oh, that'd be
man.
Terrible.
Those words are not of the station management, please. Those are from Wyatt Kaldenberg, the doctor of truthology. Is it true? Hey, that's good.
Yeah, truthology.
Truthology.
Yeah. Absolute motherfucking yeah. truthology.
Okay, now what's next? We got a big show here, you know. And what do you want to lead off with there?
Talk about the funny news. Crazy lady in court.
Oh boy, I knew you'd hit with that.
I gotta get that.
Yesterday in Vista Court, North County in San Diego, Nancy Manning, who has been cranking and stalking me and other people for at least 10 or 12 years. Finally got some comeuppance, and even Tommy got to stand up in court and say, hey, man, enough's enough. And so anyhow, she got a year in jail and 5 years probation.
Yes, she's a psychiatrist.
Well, she don't have to see no psychiatrist. Anybody knows she's nuts. They talked to her for 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
If you'd have heard what the DA read off that she was claiming,
mm-hmm.
everything from being a captain on a flying saucer ship to being an FBI agent,
mm-hmm.
but the Times or the Union newspaper in San Diego today picked it up and wrote about it, but they made a couple of mistakes, but not bad. It was a black reporter.
No, was it?
Nice gal, but she got a couple of things wrong. She said that I met Nancy Manning in Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah.
Well, I've never been to Montgomery, Alabama in my life, and I haven't been in Alabama since I was about 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been thinking one time of going down there and visiting
yeah.
old Morris Lee's. Going out to the ranch and say, hi, Morris. What do you think he'd do if I walked?
Don't they have a wall of tolerance down there or an outhouse of tolerance?
Yeah, but he's got to tolerate me if he
yeah,
tolerates everybody
true.
Else. I mean, I'm tolerable.
I know. You notice all those tolerant people never tolerate white nationalism? They'll
yeah,
tolerate anything.
I don't
though.
Understand that. You know, they
tolerate
want
dog molesters, heroin addicts.
Anything they like is tolerable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I went up there to the front door, knocked on the door and said, hey, Morris, let's have a cup of coffee. What do you think would happen?
It'd freak.
I'll bet you there'd be 15 guns pointed in my head in 2 seconds.
You know, when I was a kid, we used to have to get these vaccines for smallpox and the flus because the schools were trying to make our bodies learn to be tolerant of diseases.
Right.
Now the schools are making the white kids learn to be tolerant of minorities.
It's the same thing.
It went from smallpox to niggers.
Hey, but you know, a lot of people die from taking those
shots, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
there's a lot of people who scratch those smallpox. You used to get those big welches.
Yeah.
Those kids used to scratch them and have the big lumps on them for
life.
Oh,
yeah, I remember. I had that stuff. But look, anyhow, so Nancy Manning, now this is a gal, and how she got in contact with me. She called me way back, and she knew Danny Welch and Morris Dees,
mm-hmm.
and she'd worked for the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, she said.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me some information mm-hmm. on that. So then later, she called me on the phone, and she ended up out here, came all the way out here to Fallbrook, and at that time, I didn't know she was a mental case.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, would you meet with me, and I'll give you some more information. So I met her down here at a local bar, and bought her a drink, and she, gave me some information, but it was pretty obvious in about 10 minutes that she was
nuts. Yeah.
Nuts. Anyhow, she said she didn't have any money. She's on the street, so I bought her dinner, and then I took her and paid a motel guy and left her at the door. You know, everybody would say, oh, Metzger, you wouldn't do that. Well, I did. I was happily married. I wasn't going to get involved in that. So anyhow.
Especially if you look at her.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, just showing you that no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
Ever since then, she has come to this town and crank called me. But her big error was when she started crank calling friends of mine and mm-hmm. business people I know.
Yeah.
And then she threatened to kill a local bartender and like that. Now, this is the gal that said that she planked David Duke over in Denver.
Well, she told the National Enquirer that David Duke had a tiny penis and they were in the store. Remember, he was running for governor?
Yeah.
She's the one. But she also said she was sleeping with Danny Walsh. And
well, there was one thing that made her story seem a little bit truer about David Duke was that she knew that fireman from Denver that was running the Klan for Duke at the time, and his name escapes me right now, and he's not a well-known person. So the fact that she knew him, and the story was that this guy was, he played around with a lot of prostitutes and stuff, that he fixed Duke and him up with her. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But anyhow, she knew a lot about Danny Welch, and that was what I was interested in. Because Danny Welch, you know, was the right-hand man of Morris Deedy.
Yeah, he was an ex-cop. He's
not there anymore. He was a homicide cop in Montgomery, but he's not with him anymore. But he's the one who talked Morris into suing me civilly. He is the guy, man. Yeah. And probably because I kept talking about Nancy Manning and Welch on the phone, and I was going to tell his wife. Anyhow, this crazy gal, she was supposedly sentenced for a year, but she's already done
4 or 5 months
in good behavior. She'll be out on the street, and she'll be right back on the phone, because in the article in the San Diego Union, she don't care. She's just going to call.
She has a right to be heard. It's America.
Right to be heard, you know, right. Yeah, okay. So anyhow, that's that. Now,
well, one thing that gets me is she called up government agency and threatened them that it seemed like if we did that, we'd be doing, like, you know, 3,000 years in the electric chair.
She crank-called the DEA, the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, all of them she crank-called. And the DEA, then she would give them my phone number, and here'd be an agent calling me.
Yeah.
And said Nancy Manning said that she could be reached at this number.
Yeah.
And all that kind of crap. Now, fellas, you know, it seems sort of funny if it goes on for a week or two. But when it goes on for 12 years, you would like to wrap your fingers around her scrawny little neck.
I don't say that, because somebody's eventually going to whack
her.
Well,
she'll die in a ditch someplace, because she lives on the street, screws wetbacks, these field workers and everybody else. Oh, man. Just imagine what you might get if you did it to her.
Well, I drove through Bonzo once, and she was standing on the street corner there, you know, where the Mexicans hang out. There was all these Mexicans in Nancy Manning.
She said, and she's in the paper, said, I was mad at her, and these people in Fallbrook were mad at her because she dated minorities.
Well, you know what dating
means. Dating means screwing.
A five-buck date.
Anyhow, we got to get on with the show here. Guess what, Wyatt?
What?
Oh, we got a new publication of the Siege book by James Mason.
Oh.
Well, you know, that was a very good book, and I haven't checked it yet. There may have been more added to it, but it's a hardbound book.
Oh, is it?
They only published 500. Now, I have been shipped to me 15.
Whoa.
But I have to sell them for $45 because the guys that put up the money to have the 500 published are putting $45 on the book. And
per book?
Per book, and I promised them I wouldn't sell it for less than $45. So I've got about 14 left, and any of you boys want it out there, you just send your $45 for Siege, and we'll send you this big, beautiful, hardbound book. It's worth $45.
If it costs $45 to print, and you're selling for 50, and it probably costs, what, about $6, are you going to lose money?
No. They're selling it for $45. Obviously, it must have cost $25 maybe to print. You know how expensive that stuff is. They have contributed these books to us, and that way it helps us raise money for our project.
That's cool. Okay.
I think it's really great.
That's groovy.
And then when we run out of these, then they'll be able, they can, in fact, they could go now, but I'd like for you guys to contribute to us. Because you're not going to get it any cheaper.
No.
But Black Sun, I believe, is the one who had it published.
Oh.
And so Black Sun, after we're out of these, we'll have some.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, 500 books is not going to last very long. But I think what I'm going to do when I wouldn't do it while they still got their 500 out there, 500 less the ones we got, I think I'm going to take the old Siege, the first Siege, and put it in the coil version, like I put these books out, and like that. Because I think we need to keep Siege going, because Siege, that was before James Mason went a little off wonk in prison.
Jesus freak.
He got into being a Jesus freak, and I can't believe my good friend James Mason turned into a Jesus freak.
Well, it's not even racial.
No, but Siege, don't get him mixed up. Siege is great. That was back when he was hardcore, and it was the best revolutionary type writing that was around at the time. I mean, it just scared the right wing to death. So anyhow, they're available for $45 for your perusal and education. You need that education. Hey, there's another good book out. Eleanor Langer had been working on this book ever since the civil trial in Portland, Oregon. And it's called A 100...
100 Little Hitlers.
100 Little Hitlers, yeah. And... we don't have it available. It's printed by Metropolitan Books and Henry Holt and Company. I think it's going to run about 26 or 8 bucks on the Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's really, I was very impressed. I'm not through reading it yet, but in almost everything, I'm not to the trial yet, but it was very fair about my background and so forth and so on. Obviously, every writer makes a few mistakes. Well, it must have been fairly fair the way the publishers came
out. Oh, yeah, Publisher Weekly just ripped her a new asshole, you know, like, they're going, what does it matter that Tom Metzger is a good husband and a good father?
Boy, Morris Deese is going to have a coronary when he reads this book.
Yeah,
because it she points out that this was just a fight that took place in the street, and then how the cops... They lied on the stand.
Yeah.
They said they weren't working with Morris Deese.
Yeah.
When I, under direct questioning, they lied. Because
the
minute they found a note from John Metzger in Dave Mazzella's stuff, they sent it right off to Morris Deese.
Well, they named the cop because I guess the ADL contacted the police department and told them that they wanted to sue you. So if there's any way that they can connect you to the murder, to send Morris D the information. Lo and behold, that cop found the letter, and boom, it was evidence, and they didn't even keep it as evidence. Boom, it straight went to the D's. You know, that should be a felony. They should disbar the cop and throw him in prison. But since it's against us, they won't.
That's right. So anyhow, that book is out, and it's hot. Now, there's only one area. There's one area where she sort of went by the old Covington.
I know. She
that Deese is in my mailbox and opening up my mail, and that's, you know, I think she came here and talked to me. She talked to John. She talked to a lot of people, and I think I took her to the post office.
Oh yeah, she went with me.
She
took a photograph.
And we got the mail and everything, and so she repeated the same canard that's been around for a long time, that Deese is opening my box and getting all my mail and my money and everything else. So. I think that was not very honest of her, especially since we took her to the post office and got the mail.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, you can't have it. Nothing can be perfect. You know, right-wingers, that's what they expect. Every time a book comes out, if it's not absolutely glowingly pro-right-wing or right-wing racist, they say, oh, it's a terrible book.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have it that way.
Well, you got to edit stuff in your mind.
You got to get, you know, if smart people are going to edit out the shit, then they're going to see the good stuff, so... I recommend the book. I think it's quite revealing about old Tommy. Yeah.
No.
I think it sort of leans a little hard on me wanting something to happen, so I sort of inferred everybody go out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
I see some of that in there, which was never true.
Yeah.
You know, most of that violent shit that happened, I was pissed off about.
Oh, yeah.
Because it didn't do us any good.
Well, it's like the whole thing is when... Mazzella wanted to go up that Martin Luther King thing and take bass back. You know, you told him, like, in front of me, in front of Robert Hike, and in front of Bob, who was it, the Bastard of the Pagan was there.
Yeah.
You told him not to go. And lo and behold, what does? He goes. And then he testifies in trial. You told him to go up there and then to take a baseball glove in case the cops pull him over.
Right.
And that was just total bullshit.
Right, right. So, anyhow, but that's Dave Mazzella. You know, in there it talks about him quite a bit.
Yeah.
Said his great-great-grandmother was a Jew.
Yeah.
That's what his stepfather said.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, there was... well, anyhow, he was strange.
One thing I liked about the book is how she points out that the Southern Poverty Law Center makes all its money by playing on liberal bigotry and northern bigotry, because he portrays this, you know, the Southern people as ignorant rednecks, green teeth, and all of them are ready for a lynch mob, and it plays good on the stereotypes of liberals on the West Coast and in New England and stuff. So actually, he's basically just peddling bigotry. He's anti-white working class and anti-Southern bigotry because it plays on the rich liberal stereotypes.
Yeah, you know? He gets away with it.
Oh, yeah.
He gets away with it, but he won't get away with it forever, I'm sure, because I still think he's going to die of some terrible social disease, and that would be good. I wouldn't want to see anybody go to the jail for offing old Morris, you know. I just hoping one of those women would cut his balls off, you know. Or one of those homo guys he likes, you know. You know, I heard one of our friends that does another radio show talking about Rockwell last week, and they did a pretty good show on Rockwell, but they don't know nearly as much as we do about Rockwell, because they're not old enough to know that much about Rockwell. Well, anyhow, they said on there that he got excited when he read Mein Kampf. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what started Rockwell. Rockwell, about the time he's going to get mustered out of the Navy as a pilot in San Diego, knew some right-wing conservative people down there, and it was the Brinkers, Harriet and I forget her husband's name, Joe or something.
Yeah,
but anyhow,
it was Joe.
They lived in Escondido, California, and they were very active right-wingers and very anti-Jew and so forth.
They're members of the Silver Shirts in the 30s, he told me.
Yeah, and he used to be an executive with Sears and Roebuck in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, they had George Lincoln Rockwell over for dinner, and George was saying, "We got to get behind General MacArthur and get him in there." And they said, "You're not going to get him in there." And he said, "Well, what do you mean we can't? I want to get a haul and get going." They said, "Forget it." He said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "They said, well, the Jews won't ever let you get any place with it." He said, "What's the Jews got to do with it?"
Yeah.
That was Rockwell in about 1959.
Yeah, that was Harriet.
Yeah, and so then Harriet starts explaining to him about the Jews, and then to check it out, George Lincoln Rockwell went to the San Diego Library.
Yeah, the one that's off of Broadway. It's on the third floor where all the political stuff is.
Yeah, so if you're in that library, you can go up there. They used to keep the Talmud under lock and key.
They keep all the political stuff on the third floor in the corner room.
He went up there and spent a few days reading Talmud stuff. And when he came out, he knew what the score was.
Yeah, I've gone there and prayed in that room.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's a little bit more. There's a lot to the, the assassination. Well, Patler did it, and don't let anybody kid you, Patler did it. It was more than an argument they were having over Patler being a little darker, because Patler had been with Rockwell quite some time. So there was more to it than that, and it was more the chagrin of Patler than Rockwell. Rockwell was very easy to get along with, really. But what you had there was people trying to create a palace coup. I'm not sure whether Pierce was involved in that or he'd already left or what. I don't think he was involved.
He left by that time.
I think he was already gone, but James K. Warner was there, and James K. Warner was trusted very much by Rockwell, and Warner told Rockwell one day that he had to go to Pennsylvania to see his sick mother, and Rockwell even helped him load up his car with his clothes and stuff to go, and lo and behold, guess what else was in the trunk?
The mailing list.
The whole mailing list of the National Socialist Party, and where Warner was really going was to that other snake in the grass outfit down there, Dr. Edward R. Fields, who hated Rockwell's guts.
They had him beat up, and they called him a CIA.
In fact, it got to the point where Rockwell had to sue Ed Fields, and he won a judgment from Ed Fields.
Yeah.
And a lot of people out there that think they like Rockwell, but yet they take the Thunderbolt and the Truth at Last, and Ed Fields is a wonderful guy. Ed Fields is a damn traitor ever since he tried to have Rockwell killed.
Well, when Patler killed Rockwell, him and that other guy had the Patler Defense Fund. Remember that?
And then they also, I've got a big deal here that Warner and these guys put out trying to exonerate Patler.
Yeah.
And that was put out right after it happened. So they were trying to throw everybody off the path. Well, also on this radio show, the guy said, well, there was a meeting just before in the afternoon this assassination happened, and somebody at that meeting would have had to know Rockwell's pattern and his habits. Well, that's not true at all, because Rockwell was a very methodical, typical military man. He always went to do his laundry on the same day, the same time, the same laundromat. Mm-hmm. So everybody around, even all the Jews and everybody, could know when Rockwell did his laundry. So that meeting would have had nothing to do with having him shot. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, now there was a woman called me last year, and she was doing a book on Patler. But I got too inquisitive, and she detected that I was going to get out there and have him done away with, so she broke off communications.
You mean she thought you were going to have him get done away with?
Yeah, she thought I was going to do something like that. So anyhow, she's still writing that book, and I don't think it's been published yet, trying to exonerate him. But, you know, he ended up working for some Arab or Middle Eastern newspaper or something over in New York City. Yeah. So, anyhow, that's sort of a little bit of it. And we know a lot about the old days with the Rockwell and the guys and the Oakland Suicide Squad and that kind of stuff. So anytime you hear something, and also we're still in contact with a lot of the old veterans that are still alive that know even more than I do. Yeah. So if there's any serious question comes up about Rockwell in those days, just ask me, but don't believe everything you hear coming down the pike.
Yeah, John Jewell told me once that to him and Rockwell and Matt Cale got Patler on racial Bolshevik charges.
Well, that was what they were talking about. But you see, Matt Cale was darker than Patler. Yeah. So if it had anything to do with skin color or anything like that, Matt Cale is no Nordic, that's for sure.
Well, you know, the difference between the charge of national Bolshevikism and racial Bolshevikism is national Bolshevikism means you take socialism too serious, and racial Bolshevikism is when you include non-Germanic people in the race movement, like Southern Europeans and Slavs. Well, it depends on who's defining the term, but usually it means people of non-Nordic descent.
Well, I never have met anybody, but I may find somebody one of these days that knew absolutely what that tip was about. But I understood it was a little bit about Patler being more to the left. Yeah. But I still don't know for sure.
Well, Jewel told me it didn't have to do with economics. It had to do with allowing Southern Europeans in and stuff.
Well, that's what I heard that rumor, too, but I don't know for sure. But maybe if this book comes out on Patler, maybe some more truth will come out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Now, did you hear they're going to need 60,000 more troops for Iraq?
All right.
You know, that I keep trying to remind you guys of what I said over and over again. They say a guerrilla struggle can't win.
Yeah.
They say that you with a bunch of your little 30-06s out there cannot win against a big army.
Yeah.
They keep telling you that if the government stomps down on you, that's the end and it's all over. Well, if anybody with a little brain can see what's happening in Iraq, because Iraq is about as backward as you can get. Mm-hmm. However, they are the most educated people in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The most highly educated as far as college and everything, and even the women. But still, these guerrilla outfits over there, they're just giving them a hell of a run for their money. They've killed about 140 Americans since May. So, you know, this is just going to keep going. And you see, Americans don't understand it. Some people are in a battle for father to son.
Yeah.
They'll just keep fighting. The Americans don't understand that. They want a quick war. That's why they're getting pissed off now.
Yeah.
They always think, oh, they're going to go in there and just bomb the shit out of them. The war will be over and they'll surrender and we'll be good guys and then they'll be gone, right? Yeah. But the world don't operate like that. Some people,
you know, a lot of these people, what they think is if we go over there, beat up their government because they're alleged oppressed people, we show them what it is to be an American, they'll say, boy, America's great. I want to be an American.
Yeah.
And then they'll adapt an American democracy.
Yeah.
They don't realize that most people don't want to be Americans. They don't like this culture because this culture sucks.
They don't want the Coca-Cola society.
Or the priest molesting, you know, hundreds of kids. That's what America is.
Well, these people watch all the news that comes out of L.A. and New York and all that and all that super crime and everything. And also, look at Bush. What a hypocrite. He gets every brutal dictator over there to side with him against another brutal dictator. Yeah. I mean, that was his dictator. You're a good brutal dictator, and you're a bad brutal dictator.
Actually, Iraq, among the Muslim countries, was one of the most livable ones.
Yeah.
You know, women actually had rights. They didn't have to cover their faces. They could actually teach and hold jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
They could walk down the street without getting stoned to death.
And he made sure there wasn't any of this religious nonsense of the Shiites and the Sunnis fighting each other.
Yeah.
The Ba'ath Party was a good thing. I mean, considering you're living in a society where the Shiites are ready to go absolutely bananas and the Sunnis are ready to go bananas at any moment, killing thousands and thousands of people, how are you going to run a country like that without a strong man?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was the strong man, whether you like him or not, that kept these people from killing
each other. Yeah.
And he killed a lot of those people that were going to cause people to kill each other.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, it's sort of bad about those, people up there in the north, the Druids?
The Kurds.
Kurds. Why did you get Druids? But anyhow... Because there was a lot of whites among the Kurds, and that's a bad situation.
Actually, you know, there's blonde-haired, blue-eyed people among the Kurds.
Yeah, well, even Turks, there's some blonde, blue-eyed people among the Turks. But anyhow, that was mostly the Turks' fault.
Because
the Turks were driving them out of Turkey.
Yeah, they wouldn't let them in.
And so they drive them down there, and here they were. Neither country wanted them to take a part of their country.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Turks would drive them down into Iraq. And the Iraqis would drive them back up and kill them, and they gas them and everything. But look at the Iran-Iraq war.
Yeah.
I mean, how many million people died in
that?
That was a nasty
war with nerve
gas
and everything.
They fought it just like the Chinese did in waves. They just come waves, pray to Allah, charge, you know, and they cut them down like mad. So, I mean, you know, how can you talk about the so-called Pepsi-Cola society and being a democracy and all that shit when you're living in that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a dictator. You can't run anything like that with a democracy.
Oh, could you imagine a democracy in a Muslim country? The first thing they would do, they would elect the most militant, tyrannical Islamic leader they could possibly dream of, you know?
Yeah.
You know, bin Laden would win the election.
Well, if they have a parliament in Iraq, and you get all these Shiites and Sunnis and all these people in there.
Oh, yeah.
About the first time anything important comes up, they're going to be killing each other. Right? They'll open up on each other in the parliament.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know. So, in other words, the United States government has to garrison Iraq. That's the only way they can do it. So now we're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't have money for the schools. Every state is running a deficit. Your roads are falling apart. Your electric grid is shot. But, yeah, we got to go billions and billions and trillions in debt to screw around over there in the Middle East. Well, guess what happened?
What?
Oh, the United States just asked Israel to open up their port there in, where in the hell was it? I had it written down someplace. But anyhow, there used to be a pipeline down from Iraq down to Israel.
Oh, really?
Oh, to Haifa, I believe it was. And so after, during the time that Hussein was in power, it went into disrepair because he sort of shut it down. And that's another reason they didn't like him, see? So now, quietly, the United States government has asked them to, let's fix that pipeline up again and ship the oil down to Haifa.
Well, could you imagine a suicidal bomber hitting that pipeline if they fill it up with oil?
Well, they will.
That thing's going to be burning for months.
Why, hell, they will. They're never going to keep that pipeline open. You know, but still, that shows you the secret of what it's all about.
Yeah.
They want to ship that oil down to a so-called friendly country, and they make a lot more money.
Yeah.
Come on. What do you think, we're stupid? What's going on at the movies, Dr. Collinberg?
I read, you know, Reese Witherspoon.
In the hell is Reese Witherspoon?
A good-looking piece of ass who doesn't have a brain in her head. She played a legally...
Well, I should know her then.
Yeah, you should. Legally, Legally Blonde and Sweet Home Alabama movie. You've probably seen her. She's a really cute little blonde. Well, anyway, she's a real idiot. She's a real dumb idiot liberal. And you know what what her next project's going to be?
No.
You know that Amy Beale, that stupid white chick from Newport who went to South Africa.
Oh.
She hated white people so bad that she wanted to empower the black people.
Yeah.
Well, they got a hold of her and put a tire around her neck, put it through gas, set it on fire.
Yeah.
Well, she's going to play.
They probably raped her while it was burning, too.
Well, she's going to play that girl. So it's going to be.
Oh, sainthood.
Yes. L. Woods, Nigger Lover.
Well,
that's the character she played in Legally Blonde.
Yeah, no, I wonder how they'll play the mother. How are they going to play the mother hiring these
niggers? The murdered her daughters and hugging them and shaking their hands and forgiving them. I mean, well, like I say, is this if you saw Legally Blonde 2, this is one stupid. She's good looking, but Reese Witherspoon is one dumb fucking liberal rich bitch.
I mean, in other words, she was just like the gal that got killed.
Yeah, yeah.
So but, you know, but
it may be cool to see her with. They probably won't even put it. They'll probably make it that the white racist in South Africa killed her or something. But it would be cool if they showed her giving her a necktie party and putting a tire around her neck, put it full of gasoline.
Well, yeah. What and what would even be better is if they exposed what her mother did is hiring these guys.
Yeah.
They only did 4 years for murder.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she starts a foundation to help niggers.
Yeah.
And then she hires the killers.
She took them out to dinner on Valentine's Day and hugged them and kissed them. These are the niggers that set her daughter on fire.
You know, these are the people that scare the hell out of me, because if there's anybody that needs to be eliminated from our society, it's these kind of people.
Rich white liberals.
We cannot survive with any kind of mentality
that's
it's all coming from goddamn religion.
That's when Carl and I think me, you, and Carl went to Beverly Hills, and we were going to all these rich homes, and says, well, after the revolutions, we're going to kill these fuckers, and David Lane's going to get that house. See those big blondes? That's going to be David Blaine's sex slave.
Yeah.
That's going to be David Tate's house. We're going down all these rich houses and naming who in the movement's going to get what house.
Yeah. But however, if they do that accurately, I think it's going to backfire on them.
But that's what they will. Because I noticed when they tell the story about this, Us Magazine or People, I think it's People Magazine, had a story about this bitch's mom. They left out the fact that she was set on fire. They just said she was killed.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't say that, you know, she was tortured to death.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah,
you know?
Like somebody just shot her, or something, and just killed like it was an accident,
yeah.
You know.
So I think they will edit the movie. Like I say, they'll probably even have, like, the white South Africans actually killing it and blame it on the poor black folks, and the poor black folks got 4 years for a white man's crime.
You know, that's what bugs me. They don't show how people die.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should reenact exactly how people die
when
they show a jury.
If it was the same way
when they're talking about poor homosexuals.
Yeah.
And we want to show them sticking penises up their asses.
Or what they call rim jobs, where they stick their tongues up each
other's
asses.
Putting gophers up their asses, stuff like that, or whatever. I don't know. But, you know, because people, they sugarcoat it with a word that doesn't really show the gravity of what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way, and I usually don't defend cops, but, you know, a cop's down a dark alley, and he's got some nigger running down there, and he ends up shooting him, and the town goes crazy. And, you know, you need to put yourself in his place in the middle of the night or 3 in the morning down a dark alley with some nigger. You don't know what he's got, and he's running from you.
Oh, I heard, talking about the movies, I heard that Richard Gere's really happy that the scientists in Australia have developed a 3-pound gerbil.
Oh, man. Oh, that goes... Hey, I'm getting funny. Ooh, God, I get the shivers down my back.
Richard Gere's going to be one happy man.
They got... I saw a movie the last night. It's been out a while, but now it's in the video stores. That was Tommy Lee Jones and Hunted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a good action movie. You know, it's a typical Tommy Lee movie, like, you know...
He's made. Kicker.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, he was training. He was not... Tommy Lee was not actually an Army officer, but he was contracted to train these special ops guys that weren't even on the books. They were, you know, there was no record of them anywhere. Well, anyhow, it's about one of his students that goes a little wonk. Yeah. I think he did okay myself, but and then they sent the FBI after him.
Yeah.
And you remember that one with Sylvester Stallone where they sent the Army and the Sheriff up after him?
First Blood?
First Blood. Yeah. Well, it's sort of like First Blood. And Tommy Lee says, don't you send your FBI men, because they're all going to die. and this gal, oh, no, we're the FBI, man. And, boy, this guy proceeds and just killing the shit out of the FBI.
Who was that Del Torres?
Benicio Del Toro, yeah. I don't know, what is he, Argentine or Chilean or...
Well, he's a Mexican, isn't
Italian
he?
Or Mexican? Yeah. I don't know. He's sort of a wobbler as far as
Del Toro
as
means
white.
The bull.
I see, okay. But anyhow... I think it's a thumbs up. I'd give it, I'd give it 5 flaming swastikas. You know why?
Why?
Because in one of the first encounters where they go after him, because he escapes, every time they catch him, he escapes, they got the nigger head of the FBI. He's looking for him in this big building.
Where you be? Where you be?
And this guy just kills the shit out of that nigger. So I got to give it a... There's FBI bodies everywhere.
Oh, really?
You got to get this. It's called Hunted.
Oh, I saw that movie you recommended last week, Open Range.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good Western. I mean, it was beautiful. It actually had character development and had one of the greatest gunfights I've seen in a long time.
I saw it, too.
Yeah, because, you know, Louis L'Amour says, you know, that whole thing with Gunsmoke where you have two guys standing out in the middle of a street in the Old West and at noon and dun-dun-dun-dun, and they pull guns. He says he never found one incident in American history that ever happened because all gunfights in the West were just chaos. It was just guys shooting bullets and they're going through windows and missing. And
well, that's sort of the way that
was. It's like a gang fight. It's like a drive-by, but with horses.
Well, now I'd say this, that original where they walk up to the other guys, that wasn't intended to be a shootout.
No.
It was going to be a talk thing.
Well, I thought
you know, once they walked up and just put a bullet in the guy.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of cool because there's this one guy that the ranchers have who's a professional gunman.
Yeah.
And, what's his name? What's God darn? Kirsten Kestner.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck the guy's name is.
Yeah.
Kevin Costner asked the guy, says, well, are you the guy that killed my friend? He goes, yeah. So then he walked right up to him and shot him in the head.
Hell, he didn't even walk any farther. He just threw his gun immediately, shot him right in the foot. And this so-called professional gunfighter didn't have a chance.
Well, it's like a nigger, you know. The guy was just so busy talking shit, bragging about how he killed somebody, he wasn't thinking that the guy was going to pull on him first and whack him, you know.
Yeah, right. So, well, it was a great movie. I like Westerns, and I like Westerns well done. I like Robert Duvall. In fact, that movie I thought was supposed to be shot here a few miles from where we're living. But they changed locations, I guess.
No, that movie looked like it looked like Montana.
Well, it might have been, but I knew some guys here that are in the Western shootout stuff, and they said that they were going to do a Robert Duvall movie out here in Duluth. And I said, well, get me in as an extra.
Maybe they may have had some of the scenes in town and stuff in Duluth.
But anyhow, I don't think any of it was shot out here. Yeah.
Maybe not.
But anyhow, that shootout, I think, was very realistic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, just all the missing. I liked it, too, that the townspeople wouldn't help until there's one so-called bad guy was running away. And once the gunfight was over and they knew this bad guy was defenseless, they all got their shotguns and just basically blew him to pieces. You know, they're running after him, blowing him to pieces and stuff.
But a special mention has to be made about the little old guy that run the livery stable.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He died after that movie.
Yeah, he was with them, and he put his life on the line. It just shows you that, in a town, or any place, you're going to have a little problem. Sometimes you'd be surprised who's going to be on your side.
Yeah,
you can make sure most of them won't be on your side. Most of them just want to hide.
Well, until, like I say, after the gunfight, then all the townspeople came in and joined. Before that, they were running like hell and hiding in their houses.
Was there a nigger in that movie?
No, there wasn't any.
There was no nigger in that movie.
So there was actually that one kid was a Mexican, but he's a real white kid.
Oh, yeah,
he's
yeah.
A white guy.
He's a white, he's Diego a Hispanic. Guy.
Yeah, white Hispanic.
Yeah, I'd have to give that 5 Flaming Swastikas.
Oh, yes. Kevin Costner, I saw him on TV. He said if this movie does well, he's already got a script for another Western. He wants to do more. He does the Westerns pretty good. I like his Westerns a lot.
You know, I never liked him in a regular movie.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the guy I didn't like. But in the Westerns, for some reason, his persona is different. And I like him in a Western. Yeah.
Well, he's more believable as a cowboy, especially when he does the quiet stuff.
Yeah. I always thought in regular movies he had a sort of a weak voice.
Oh, yeah.
But if for some reason, the way he does it in the cowboy movies, it doesn't make him look weak.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyhow, I like that movie. You know, I was talking to my girlfriend about this, and I said, you know, now these movies, they always make one side, you know, black, one side white. In other words, one side's all right and the other side's all wrong. And I sort of, you got to rethink these movies and not let these writers just screw with your brain. Now, just think, this so-called bad guy, he owned maybe 10,000 acres or something, and he came out here to the West as a poor Irish kid from Ireland and probably in the potato famine thing. He came out there, he probably lived in a log cabin or a sod hut or something. He fought the Indians, everything. He gradually built this big ranch. And he wants to hold it. And all of a sudden, here come these free grazers through with their herds of cattle. And a lot of people don't realize cattle don't just eat all grass.
Yeah.
It's got to be so tall and only certain kind of grass. So you're looking out there, you say, well, I can't understand it. There's thousands of acres of grass, but cattle don't eat those thousands of acres of grass.
Yeah.
So he's seeing all these free grazers coming through like the wetbacks coming through our backyard, and so he gets pissed off and starts planking them.
You know, the Irish guy that's in there that, you know, he fought off the Indians and stuff like that, and basically probably had friends that died there and stuff, and he comes these guys up from Texas.
Probably buried his wife there because he didn't have a wife and the whole bit. So, you got to look at both sides of these kind of things, you know?
You know, it's kind of a trip, is that movie, when the guy got killed, they put on his grave marker that he died in 1882. That's the year my grandmother was born.
Wow.
So it's kind of a trip to think that, you know, that there's, like, connections with history. Like, she was just a little baby when all this stuff was going on, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, I always say, when you go to a movie or read a book, always use your own brain, too. Don't let the director screw with your brain. You know, yeah. I started to watch a movie last night that was called Warrior, and it was a white kid, and his dad's down on his luck and screwing around and gambling, and he had loan shark problems. And anyhow, so they transfer this sharp white kid into this ghetto school, and immediately the niggers are all over him, and he's fighting for his life, and they find out he can fight box, and his crooked manager gets him to box, so he boxes just to get money to pay off his dad's gambling bills and the whole bit. And it was really going good. There's this white kid standing up, kicking the shit out of these black guys the whole bit. And gradually they move you in there. They bring Gooding in as another fighter, and they become friends. And then there's Ozzy, what's his name, that old nigger playing the... He plays his coach. And pretty soon there's another guy that's his buddy, and they socialize with his wife and black kid. And before long, they've turned it into a total race-mixing show. So about half the show's over, I just turned it off.
Yeah.
The first half was great.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're never going to give you a good white kid against bad niggers unless they have to balance it out with all these good niggers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you just have to watch the good part and then turn it off.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I did.
Damn right.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Mr. Gravedigger.
Cruz Bustamante.
Yeah, that name in Spanish means grave digger, and he's trying to dig the grave of Arian, California.
Yeah. He wants to knock down the border between California and Mexico and make it one economic region.
Well, they just, him and all his capitalist transnationalist friends do, too, and all his left-wing, isn't that interesting? All these left, extreme left-wingers actually play into the hands of the transnational corporation, but they say they hate them?
I've said this for years, is that the left has always been the cat's paws for capitalism. Whatever the left wants to do 10 years, I mean, the corporations want to do 10 years from now, the left are doing today.
Yeah.
If the capitalists want interracial marriage, if they want more immigrants, today, the left wing will do it, and then 10, 20 years from now, that's when the corporations, that'll be safe for the capitalists to do it.
Exactly, and that's why we have to spurn both the left and the right, because the mainline left and right are all traitors.
They are all wings of the same beast.
That's
because
right.
You can't, you know, like the right wing, is there a wing floating around by itself? The left and right wing have to be connected.
Wait a minute. We went through this one time about 6 months ago about this wing and shit.
Damn right.
And you said if you only had one wing, you'd just go around in a circle?
You'd go around in circles.
Oh, okay.
It would just be a right wing floating or a left wing floating because they're connected to a beast. And the beast is international capitalism.
Yes.
It's a one world government.
Yeah, and the international socialism, too. They're all wrapped up together.
Well, that's when the right wingers are always talking to themselves right wingers. So that means they're part of the beast.
Yeah.
You can't be a left-winger or right-winger without being a part of something, and something you are is a new world order.
Hey, Dr. Collenberg, I think you hit on something here.
We are our own movement.
Oh,
damn it.
Wait a minute. Let me write that down.
We are our own entity. We are our own beast. We're a wolf.
I'm going to laminate
that. We are a wolf fighting the serpent.
I'm going to laminate that for my wallet. Is that okay?
We are a separate beast.
Are you going to copyright that?
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Quote the doctor, we are a separate beast.
Reverend Miles used to say, ourselves alone.
Yeah.
No,
Jim Fang.
But King King used to say, not Don King, my friend who's dead now, King, George King, used to say, notre chose. That's our thing in French.
Mm-hmm. Fin Shane.
Yeah. So anyhow, it is our thing alone, and the left and the right are simply holding pens for the stupid that actually are serving the anti-white thing. So when you hear right-wing conservatives, I mean just regular right-wing conservatives that would die to save that damn block of granite down there in Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
My God, I'll fight to the death.
Isn't that amazing? You got a state Supreme Court judge, the federal courts. The Constitution says, you know, supremacy in law, that this federal Supreme Court outrules the state courts. So whatever the federal courts do, the state courts are supposed to obey. And here's a fundamentalist Christian judge in Alabama told the federal courts to go fuck off, that he didn't care, that he said that God is more important than the United States Constitution. Can you imagine if a Muslim would have said that, if a Muslim judge would have said, the Quran is more important than the United States? You know, all these white settlers would be all upset about it.
What if he'd have said, if he'd have stood up and said, white race is what's important?
Oh, yeah.
I don't see all these people down there willing to go to war for the white race.
Yeah.
They talk about all the southern rebels and racists and the Klan and everybody down there. They're more interested in that goddamn block of granite down there that's got the Jewish crap on it.
Oh, yeah.
And why do Aryans need 10 laws anyhow?
Yeah.
Don't we know what is right?
Yeah.
I knew what was right and wrong before I ever heard of the 10 Commandments.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that it was wrong to steal intuitively when I was a kid.
I break about 8 of them on a regular basis.
Well, yeah, but anyhow, and the law of Hammurabi was much better.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this was nothing but a sort of a...
Eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
This was sort of a ripoff of the Code of Hammurabi, which was more of an Aryan law.
Well, the whole thing in the Old Testament is when they talk about the eye for the eye and the tooth for a tooth, you know, that's not a Jewish thing. The Bible's talking that. It's talking about the laws of Babylon. It's not talking about the laws of the Jewish God, because the Jewish God never says an
eye for an eye. That's law of nature.
Yeah, well, that's a pagan law. So it's not
a Jewish law at all. If you're going to have the religion, it's got to be nature, because nature, it can't be wrong.
Because Babylon, outside of the city limits, they had all their laws that were carved in rock and stone. Well, just like that thing in Alabama. They're carved in stone, and that was one of the laws, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, because if you ran over somebody with a chariot, the penalty was that they would run you over with a chariot.
Now, don't you think, though, it's pretty bad when you got to write down in stone these laws?
Yeah.
I mean, why can't you carry them in your heart? That, you know, basic laws that it's wrong to take your neighbor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong to be a thief. And these basic things, which every good Aryan should know without having them written down.
But what if your neighbor is a race traitor? Why can't you take his wife then?
Well, maybe you ought to put that in stone.
Yeah. Adultery is bad unless the guy is a fucking race here, then bang the fuck out of his wife.
But I'm talking about an Aryan society.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are none of these other races
around,
and how we would work together among ourselves.
Yeah.
However, I don't know. I guess I have to go back to Might is Right.
Yeah.
And I feel more comfortable there, I guess. And, boy, they don't mess around in Might is Right.
Yeah.
Ragnar, you know, take what you can get and hell with everybody, So, I don't know. You know what I wish is some atheist would sneak in there and stick a dynamite underneath that son of a bitch and blow that rock to a million pieces. Now, what would that cost?
Oh, really?
They'd blame the government, see?
Yeah, yeah.
The fundamentalists.
Yeah.
They'd say, oh, that's a communist plot from the government. And the government would say, well, that's from these, I don't know, but we'll find them. You know, maybe, and then spread the rumor the Muslims did it. They'd be grabbing every Muslim and dragging them behind a car.
Yeah, well, it would be funny just to go there with a chisel and just chisel those words off the rock.
Yeah.
You just have a rock
in. Well, you should chisel in what you're talking about.
It's
wrong to covet your neighbor's wife unless he's a race trainer.
Yeah, it's wrong to steal unless he's a race trainer.
You could go down there with a piece of masking tape.
Yeah, just add stuff on.
Stuff on there.
Amendments to
the Pretty soon
amendments.
You'd have the whole damn thing wrapped around the edges with the amendments.
Yeah.
Well, the Constitution's got amendments.
Yeah,
like
the commandments.
Well, we got to amend the 10 Commandments.
Yeah, get the fuck out of the way, Jehovah Wyatt's coming.
Yeah, man. Hey, you know, Matt Hale's trial's coming up in September.
Oh, really?
I want everybody to find out, and I don't have it right on me here, exactly when that's going to start. And I'll tell you what, all you big-talking assholes from the Midwest where you're fairly close to Chicago, mm-hmm. if you're not up there supporting Matt Hale, don't ever talk to me again. I get so damn tired of these people. Oh, yeah, I'm for the white race. I'm down for the white race. I'd die for the white race. They won't even go out and support poor old Matt or somebody like that.
Well, you know how you get skinheads to go to a courtroom?
I'm not talking about just skinheads.
Well, anybody,
I'm talking about all those
anybody
assholes.
In the race movement. There'll be free beer there. There'll be loud music, and there'll be teenage boys with their shirts off. So be sure to go to the courtroom.
Oh,
that's how you get them to go.
I'm talking about guys who wear suits and stuff too, and all these people.
Then there'll be free coffee and donuts.
All the National Alliance types and so
free
forth.
Coffee and donuts.
And
I'll get them in the courtroom.
Well, I'm telling you. If I'm going to fly over there myself if I can at all, and I want to sit in at least a couple of days to support Matt. So by golly, you got plenty of time to get set and find out when Matt's trial is and get in there and support him. And I hope those feds surround me when I go in there, because I want to look at him with my evil eye and I say, I hope you all die.
Oh.
Yes, I will. And I'll say, watch that hooded movie. That's cool. What I think of you guys. Man, time flew so fast we didn't even get the calls in today, man.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to believe.
And I got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about here.
Well, I need to tell them about the song.
Oh, yeah, the song.
From Wyatt's Childhood.
From Wyatt's Childhood.
My favorite Beatle.
Who was it?
That was John Lennon.
The Beatles.
He was a weird, screwy guy, but he was the greatest singer of the 60s, I thought.
Yeah, well, the city that didn't lose power was separatist Montreal.
Cool.
The Frenchmen, who are smart enough to separate and have their own power station. So while all that area up there is dark, the Frenchmen, the frogs that everybody's always insulting,
Frogtown was
they
jumping.
Had the power, and everybody, all the Canadian Anglo-Saxons had to run over to Montreal to party.
To get things happen.
Well, we're running out of tape here, man. But anyhow, we didn't get a chance to talk about Bustamante.
No.
But we're going to support Bustamante, because the only way to bring this immigration invasion to the fore is to get them going, get these Mexicans going, and get that Bustamante really going out there and whipping Arnold, because Arnold's not going to say shit about immigration.
Oh, he's going to bring the races together and Bustamante
set
them apart.
Yeah, and then all the ones that are already here are wonderful, no problem with them. No, Bustamante could bring the racial thing and the border to a head.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to see old Bustamante, the grave digger, really get out there and start.
The bad thing with Arnold, the Jews got so much on him that they're going to blackmail the hell out of him. He's going to be the most anti-white governor you've ever
you
seen.
You think I'd ever vote for a guy that gave the Simon Wiesenthal Center $5 million? Kiss my ass. He can't be any part of what I'm doing.
Yeah. You know, did you read that thing, I guess, Covington sending out about the National Alliance about Pierce making porno movies and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I mean, only a queer would be upset like that. I mean,
what's that all about? If Pierce had a porno gal in the back room, Christ, I should have joined.
Oh, yeah. I hope when I'm 70, I'm banging 18-year-olds.
Yeah, no. Whenever you start seeing that kind of crap coming across the line, you know you're dealing with a liar.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that they go through all these minor people's names and their girlfriends,
yeah,
and they talk about all their heterosexual relationships. And who else would give a shit about that, about a faggot?
Well, fastest hour ever seen. What do you say?
Yeah. Don't believe the shit you read on the internet, and goodbye.
Happy trails.
Goodbye, bye.